Well, good morning and good evening, EPL State of Mind listeners. The New York tri-state area was not the only place where seismic shifts were felt this week. Our very own world of the Premier League had quite the shakeup as well, with a new team taking over the top spot yet again. But here, as the dust settles from the weekend's action, we're here to break it all down for you, so don't worry about it. From a heated draw in Manchester to Tottenham's surge to the top four and a dominant performance from both Arsenal and City at the top of the table provide plenty of intrigue. But that's not all. We're also keeping you all up to date on the latest point deduction news and our most recent games filled with last-minute drama. Sit back and relax as we delve into the EPL state of mind. And remember, in this tile race, even the ground beneath you isn't safe from shifting. Sean, I like this one quite a bit, not only because it was so hip with current events and happenings, but it really affects all of us to our core. So well done putting that one together, Sean. Big kudos to you.
Yeah, almost pooped my pants Wednesday when I'm just sitting at home and the window just starts shaking. Like, what the hell was that?
Oh my God, it was horrible. And I not everyone knows this, but I work in the construction industry and I recently am in charge of my own project in the city. And we had a boom truck, 150-foot boom truck set up outside of our project. And my project's on a 1929-year built, old, really riggedy and kind of building in the city. And when that ground shook, I actually thought that my boom truck fell into the building and the building I was working on was now collapsing beneath me. And there was not a single brick on that building that would have been as large as what I chat out that morning as well. It was gigantic. It was huge. But all is well here. We have all three of our...
All is not well. The world is ending. What are you talking about? The sun went out today. Are you kidding me? Dude, I'm calling this right now. Yellowstone is erupting this year. I'm calling that. It's over.
It's written in the gospel, the Kyle gospel. First day, earthquake. Second day, the sun solar eclipse. Third day, what is it? It's Yosemite, right? Yosemite?
Yellowstone, the big one, the geysers.
Those are two separate ones.
See, I'm very well traveled along the world, but domestically, I got nothing.
And Krakatoa, they're all going.
Yeah, Yosemite's California, and Yellowstone, I think, is like Wyoming.
Yeah, that's a good stab at it. I think that's probably right. But the only thing that's going to be hotter than that volcanic eruption is probably the hot news that we have for all of you today, knowing that we're all healthy and well. It is Everton back on the docket again. Recently, Everton were deducted 10 points. That was reduced to 6. But even more recent, they have been penalized with another 2-point deduction for breaching the profit and sustainability regulations yet again. This is for the 2023 financial period breach of £16.6 million over the allowed loss limit we mentioned before. Sean, despite this being a completely different financial charge, what's going on here?
Yeah, so it's still basically the same thing that they broke rules for. So they were punished for going over the allowed loss limit in 2022. That 3-year period, and then this is the additional one ending on September 1st of 2023. It puts them back, like I said, closer to the relegation zone. They did win this week, which was huge. So they do sit 2 points clear, but they have massive games coming up. In their next 5, they have a home game against Nottingham Forest, who is 1 spot below them, and then a trip to Kenilworth Road, which obviously that's Luton's best chance of staying up is catching one of Forest and or Everton. Initially, this was supposed to be a 5-point deduction, but based on mitigating factors, which included the fact that they've already lost points this season from the issue that we talked about, the breach that we talked about in the past, the loss of sponsorship money relating to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, which Blake talked about in detail in our Toffee Time episode, and then also Everton putting their hand up and saying, yeah, we broke the rules back on September 1st. All those things were evaluated, and basically they knocked 3 points off what would have been a 5-point penalty, and instead it'll be 2. Everton has already said that they'll appeal it, but it definitely will be something. I think it's going to stand. If it gets reduced, it'll be 1 point, but I still think they're going to lose something on this one.
Yeah, I mean, you can't just... I don't think you can say that there's a point deduction, then you remove it unless you're Manchester City. It sounds like you can do that and then you get away with it. But we'll see that when it comes further down the line.
Listen, we're not getting away with it. We're postponing it strategically. Okay. It's a very big difference.
Fair enough. But it just seems like every time Everton are in the clear, the English Premier League just wants to drag them back into it. But hey, if you're an Everton fan, you're used to this relegation battle for the past 3-4 seasons, so nothing different for you. You do have a game in that 5-game span, I think, with Sheffield United too. So you don't have the most difficult run-in. So you should hopefully, with a couple good forms or maybe good defense, which you guys have had relatively recently, you'll be able to put up some good numbers there. One of the more crazy pieces of hot news we do have here did not take place in the English Premier League. It took place again in the Turkish Super League. And that was Fenerbahce walks off the pitch against Galatasaray in the Turkish Super Cup final. So this is one of probably Kyle's more favorite things because it does involve revisiting the past in which the Turkish League, we've had scenarios where fans storm the pitch, attack previous players, and the whole entire match kind of turns into a big MMA event, which I know Kyle, a lot of heart, no red cards, but just a lot of kicking
exciting.
Out.
That's a very big excitement for me. It's, you know, it's what football's meant to be. This is dating back 100 years ago to when they used to slide tackle studs up. You know, they used to wear brass knuckles. You've all seen Shaolin soccer. That's a history course for y'all. But like, it's just, there's a lot of heart. A lot of heart going into those matches in Turkey.
Well, I mean, I don't disagree with you, but this game did kind of result in or end because of a protest. So, Sean, do you want to walk us through this? And then, Kyle, if you have any more less historically inaccurate statements to go based off of, we can go from there.
Sure. So, basically, there's two reasons for this. The first was that the Fenerbahce requested that the game be postponed after their Europa Conference League quarterfinal game at Olympiacos, which starts next Thursday. But that was turned down by the Turkish FA. And the Fenerbahce president released a statement a couple of days before the game where he said it was time for a rebellion and a reset of Turkish football in totality. So he's pretty fed up, like I said, obviously not being able to move that fixture. And then also Fenerbahce had two players suspended in that on-field brawl with Trabzonspor fans that we talked about a couple of weeks back. This one's just a wild story. And I mean, the shenanigans in Istanbul never seem to cease.
This ended technically with a 1-0 win for Galatasaray. They scored, Icardi scored within 40 seconds of the match. And then it pretty much ended. The Fenerbahce players walked straight off the pitch. And they didn't even bring their first team squad, Fenerbahce, right? They brought their reserves.
Yeah, it was the U19 team. So actually, Galatasaray scrimmage between their first team and their reserves. So the people that were in the stadium had something to watch. But yeah, if you go on YouTube, the highlights of the game are like a minute and 30 seconds because it's just like the person walking the trophy out of the beginning, the goal by Icardi, and then everybody walking off for Fenerbahce and nothing else. Very succinct.
Well, Kyle, if you want to make a heart comment, the heart comment goes out to the players and the substitutes of Galatasaray sticking around and giving the fans a little bit of comfort seeing some soccer.
I think the heart goes out to the fans. I mean, you stick around, you watch your team play. Imagine the feeling of going to a final and knowing 1 minute into the game, we're hoisting the trophy. I mean, they must have been on cloud nine the entire time. I'm envious of that. But yeah, it also sounds like the president of of who is this, Fenerbahce, is trying to start like a coup. Like, yeah, we need to rebel, we need to reset, you know, fuck the government, we gotta take them all down. Like, I don't know if that's the play, but we'll see.
We will.
You know, I don't know if the U19 players let that goal in on purpose or not. Like, it almost seems like they're just, hey, let's let up a goal and storm off, because that's a bigger statement than just storming off. Like, hey, I guess. But hey, it's Icardi. He's probably the best player out there, so I'm not surprised he scored.
Definitely man of the match, at least.
Oh, it's got to be a 10 rating, right? Like, fantastic.
100% shot accuracy, 100% shot on target.
What are the? Do you guys know what the ratings are for the players who just like never touched the ball the entire? Like the goalie for Galatasaray, like he never touched the ball. Does he get a rating? Is that like a 6?
You can't even get you. I guess you enter the pitch on a 6. So when you leave the pitch, I guess it is. But they all got 0s in my books. But I think with this being said, we won't get more hot news like a protest with that, but we did have some really intense games this weekend that had massive implications to the EPL State of Mind title race, as you all know, because all three of our teams are participating in 1, 2, and 3 pole positions for hoisting our trophy. We had the match of the weekend, more so or less, and that was Liverpool versus Manchester United. This game did end 2-2 at Old Trafford, kind of a replay of the FA Cup game that Liverpool and Manchester United went to penalty kick shootouts at. But one would argue that Liverpool was in a better position to win this one. They had an XG of 3.92 and Manchester United had an XG of 0.87. So this is kind of a story of a game of two stories. The Manchester United chaotic way that they create issues with players and teams that you don't know what they're setting up with. You don't know how they're doing it. And then you have Liverpool's story, which is they are by far the league's best team in creating opportunities. And they do have one of the best attacking forces out there. But it's the story of missing your opportunities. In order to talk further on this, I think, Sean, you have some pretty good insight on how you felt through the game and what ultimately was Liverpool's demise in this game.
Absolutely. And kind of like you talked about, it's just, you're ruining their missed chances in the first half. I mean, first 10 minutes of the game, I thought Man United started pretty well. They won a couple of corners, but they didn't create a ton. And then from there, Liverpool kind of settled in and dominated. But they just didn't take their chances. I think especially that right-hand side with Bradley, Salah, and Szoboszlai were just super wasteful in terms of their final third, touches in the box, just giving the ball away way too much and just not making the right decision. And that just kind of seemed to be a trend throughout. They did get on the board in the first half off a Luis Diaz corner that was flicked on by Nunez, and then Diaz was able to slot it home for his 11th goal of the season. But at halftime, I was sitting at the diner with Grace's dad watching the game, and we both said to each other, you know, anytime you make mistakes like that, in terms of not putting a team away, you get punished more often than not. It's like being in the penalty box constantly in hockey or walking batters all the time in baseball. Eventually it's going to catch up to you. And it did in this game. Almost immediately out of the halftime break, Jarrell Kwanzaa makes his first mistake pretty much all season for Liverpool with a lazy back pass that Bruno Fernandes latches onto and just hits it first time. Definitely a bad pass, but at the same time, it's an unbelievable finish from Bruno. So he deserves credit for that. And right after that, again, just poor decision-making off the break. Nunez kind of looks like he's played in by Diaz. And if he just touches it back, like all he needs to do is just put it, it's on a platter for Szoboszlai to put it into an open net. Instead, he tries to go across the goal and he misses. And it just feels like, you know, I'm thinking about the Brighton game. I'm thinking about the Arsenal game at Anfield. I'm thinking about a couple of other instances throughout this year, probably the City game at Anfield as well, where Liverpool just aren't quite as ruthless in transition and on the counter as they have been in years past. I think two big reasons for that are obviously Jota's injury. I think he would have been, if he played in this game, Liverpool probably put it to bed in the first half with 2 or 3 goals. I just think his, he's almost like an assassin, man. He just kills teams off so well, especially on the break, like I was talking about before. I think his IQ is unbelievable in terms of his decision making in those scenarios. And Firmino leaving as well, I think they really missed that quality. He's so unselfish. He's not, if he's going to lay it off for somebody else, if it's a hockey assist, it doesn't matter to him. I think he was also a big reason for why we were so good off the break, and not having that IQ is definitely a part of the reason why we struggle in those scenarios. But overall, it's a really aggravating game. I can't remember, honestly, at any point being as aggravated watching a football match as I was in this game, knowing that they had to take their chances and didn't, immediately getting punished for it by Bruno. And then the Maino goal, which was a pearler of it in its own right. Oh, I that was rock bottom. I was like, oh, this is brutal to a fucking shit Manchester United team, knowing that we're not going to go home with 3 points in a game that we dominated for the vast majority of. Just two moments of real class from two of their best midfielders. But really difficult one to swallow. And obviously they move now behind Arsenal to second place in the table.
Yeah, I think it's a tough one. I think you nailed it. I mean, this game was a huge game for Liverpool that could have put away their XG's plus some with opportunities that they took. You know, Man U had a different back four for the 26th time this season, which is insane to think about. They started with the pairing of Maguire and Kemba Walla. And shout out to him, Kemba Walla, that is. I think he's like 20 years or so. He's 19. He's from France. He played very well at center back position. But Liverpool peppered them with 28 shots to 9. And Manchester United in the first half had zero shots, zero big chances. This was Liverpool's just how they always play. They're dominant. They are a dominant team, but it's the missed opportunities. You know, I said it before, I think they're the best when it comes to creating chances and pure volume, but they just need to convert them. And I think your comment about Jota, whose shot conversion rate currently is 25%, is what they were missing. And I think the depth with missing Firmino, Bobby, is huge. You look to your bench now and you have Gapko, who hasn't turned out to be the greatest that you were hoping to, and then Gravenberch, who would essentially be kind of another rotational player in that more forward midfield looking. You just don't have those options with Jota and Firmino gone. But, you know, Liverpool will be back. They are going to play like this consistently, and when you have 28 shots, you're going to be scoring goals. But like you said, big shout out to Bruno and Mano. I've been very critical of Bruno this season just because I think he's been a little bit lackadaisical with his work rate. He has created, I think, either the most, if not the second most chances in the league so far with through balls. But his work rate in this game was through the roof. At some points, he was the highest man up the pitch, and others, he was the deepest man for Manchester United in the back line. And I'm pretty sure at one point he had a very pivotal tackle in their own final third to break a Liverpool attack. And then, of course, that 40-yarder, one time you got to give him respect on that. It was just inches away from hitting the post, which would most likely result in a Liverpool W for that. And then one big player during this game I want to shout out is Casemiro. The best thing he may have done for Manchester United was being injured earlier in the season, because if he was not injured early in the season, it is possible that the Kobbie Mainoo would still be working his way into rotation with this squad and not a for sure starting center back or center defensive midfielder at the age of 19. He does turn 19 on the 19th, which is why I say 19. He is currently 18, but he bossed the midfield defensively. He had 90% of his ground duels were won. He committed zero fouls. He had multiple slide tackles that were just really pivotal points in the middle, and his consistency has been unreal. So a huge win for Manchester United to discover such a young talent that they'll hang on to for quite a while, and I think we've kind of glossed over that a little bit. But Sean, Kyle and I have a surprise for you. We have a special guest coming on, and his name is Ian. So, Ian, why don't you come on right now and tell us what you think about Manchester United? Kyle, you should see your face right now.
Ian's no, he is on. Not. I figured this would be. Are you kidding me? We have a deal. If they win a trophy, he'll come on. That's unbelievable.
He'll never be on the show. That's such
a shame. Listen, I had two takeaways from that game. One, Bruno Fernandes. That goal shows me his field awareness. There's probably, I can count the guys on my right hand using my fingers who would have taken that shot. And that is him knowing that that goalie is out of position and that ball is right in front of him. Everyone else I know, fucking Erling Haaland, he would take a touch. Why wouldn't you? You're in the middle of the field. You got space. Take a touch. I thought that was unbelievable quality out of Bruno Fernandes. The other thing is, James, you touched upon Man U not getting a shot in the first half. That hasn't happened for 2 years since the last time, not the last time, but 2 years ago, it was against Liverpool as well, where they didn't register a single shot in the first half. And the irony for this game is Manchester United put the ball in the back of Liverpool's net in the first minute of the game. Garnacho scored on that run, but that's offsides. So like, talk about a momentum shift of, you think you're one up in the first minute to zero shots in the entire half.
That's true.
That's just the quality of Liverpool right there. They're not falling back. They're not getting scared from that. They're playing their game. They're dominating possession, and they're not letting Man U shoot that ball, period.
Yeah. I'm curious, and we were talking about, and you're right. I mean, the first 10 minutes, Sean, you called it out. Manchester United looked like they were coming out, pressing very hard. They were looking to cause Liverpool a lot of issues. But we talked about not being able to capitalize on opportunities. And Sean, I'm just curious on one player individually, and it's Mo Salah. To me, he kind of unfortunately stood out for the lacking of his typical presence that he always has there. And if he didn't have the penalty kick and he didn't convert the penalty kick, you're looking at a pretty subpar performance from Mo Salah with the opportunities that he took. I'm curious, if you had to give him a game rating, what would you give Salah for that game?
Yeah, probably a five or six. I don't think it was a very good performance, like you said. I think I talked about it before. The decision-making in the final third, he was one of the main culprits of that. That's something that's kind of unusual for him because, you know, we've become so used to him picking out the right pass or the killer pass or, you know, opening up an area or an angle for him to shoot. And it wasn't on for him. Obviously still working his way back from a long-term injury, but certainly not in the best of form right now. Obviously, like you said, did convert the pen that equalized the game. But you know, if he was a bit sharper, maybe it goes the other way. He obviously has dragged Liverpool through a number of games throughout this year, but yeah, right now they definitely need more from him.
Sean, you're not going to like this, but I have to say it for Ian. Darwin Nunez is dog shit.
Oh God.
That fucking ball that he tried to put back across the net. This is probably like the 60th minute. The fact that he didn't put that into the back of the net is preposterous. I mean, that is if you're a striker, you should have one thing on your mind, and that is shoot that fucking ball. That's an open net. So I want to say whether or not he played well, which, you know, the rest of the game is one thing. That one moment reminded me of some of his major blunders on the season.
Yeah, it's tough. He's hot and cold, right? We've talked about Nunez before. Sean mentioned it earlier in this segment that he had the opportunity to just tap that ball back for him, and it would have been great. But again, Nunez has chose the hard life, and he goes the path less traveled. So if he can score a banger, he'll score a banger, and then the simpler stuff are a little bit more difficult for him to figure out. But it's Nunez.
Yeah, I mean, listen, like I said, he's got to let that one go. He had another one late on that he Onana made a good save on. Who, yep, by the way, played really well.
Yeah,
I would just say, to retort Ian's point, I couldn't really talk that much shit as a Manchester United fan about a guy who has more goals and more assists than anyone on my team this year. And it's not even close, by the way. The top scorer for United has 7 goals. Nunez has 11. The top assister has 6 assists. That's Bruno with 6. Nunez has 9. So it's come on. We're comparing a quality top class forward to, you know, a bunch of scrubs who are playing for a mid-table team that's overachieved this year.
Yeah, but he missed that chance.
Yeah, the one
chance, he missed it.
That can be added to United's trophy cabinet. They do whatever they can to catch up to Liverpool. They're still trailing in. There's potential for an even bigger gap by the end of this year.
Well, the good news is that there is still 7 games to be played. There's only one. There's 0 points, you know, separating Liverpool from Arsenal, just goal differential, only 1 point separating Man City from the remainder of the first and second place teams. There's going to be, you know, the run-in is the last 10 games, but when you're this close with 3 people, you it's going to be different every single week. I would not be surprised if we have 2 different lead changes by the end of the season until we have a winner. I mean, it's just that close. But everything is at this point, you must win moving forward. It's you got to win out, your destiny's in your hands and stuff like that, yada, yada, yada. But Liverpool are not dead by any means. With that being said, a team that has kind of laid off their momentum, and we kind of predicted during the halfway hopes and horrors, the team that would kind of unfortunately go on the decline, but everyone kind of wanted to see doing well and continue that upward trend, is Aston Villa versus Brentford. So this was actually a matchup of my who's going to be doing worse and who's going to be doing better at that episode. I predicted Villa would be doing worse after the halfway point, and I predict Brentford would be doing better. Half of that's true. Villa is doing worse just because of game congestion. Their legs are getting more tired. They're really trying to compete with top 4, top 5 teams, which is going to be difficult for a team that's up there for the first time. And then Brentford, who I really thought that the return of Ivan Toney would see millions of dividends being paid with that weight, but unfortunately he has not been providing what we need to see from him. And unfortunately, I think that will help hurt Brentford in 2 ways. One, it's not going to get them where they need to be this season for any form of European tournaments. And then 2, it's probably only doing him worse for his transfer market value. Coming back in this form, probably could have sold him when it was high, and it, you know, everyone was on him, not knowing what he would be coming back form wise. Coming back the way he is, I don't think he's a $100 million player anymore. I don't think anyone's going to be willing to pay that much for him, and we'll see how it goes from there. But this game, Villa versus Brentford, tied 3-3 in another game that was kind of on crack. Brentford scored three goals in a row within 9 minutes to take a 3-2 lead after being down 2-0. But Kyle and Sean, you want to walk us through this one?
Yeah, sure. There was a lot of goals in this one. We had six of them. I want to chalk this one up to a massive Aston Villa blunder. There is no reason they should not have walked away with all 3 points from this game. They, you know, they went into the half up two, or I guess they went into the half up one, but scored in the first minute of the second half. And then, as James alluded to, they proceeded to let up three goals in 9 minutes. It looked a little bit lazy to me. I don't know if you guys ended up watching the game, but their third goal was just simple drive into the corner, pass along the goal sideline, and there's no one in the middle but another Brentford player. And it's like they let up two in 7 minutes. You know, it hurts. It happens, but that is not a reason that you let up off the gas. I'm a little bit surprised Brentford didn't put a fourth in, to be honest. I think the coach made great plays. After that third goal, he gathered the team, talked to them, and they went back out. And they were able to get that equalizer in the 80th minute through Ollie Watkins. Once again, their savior, one goal behind Erling Haaland. But it wasn't the most exciting game. I can't believe I'm saying this on a 3-3 game, but the highlights, none of the goals were great. It was less than 20 total shots in the entire game. Aston Villa kind of dominated the game, you know, say that 10 minutes from, the 50th to the 60th, right around there, that Brentford just dominated. But, I mean, that just goes to show you were in the Premier League. If there's not a team in the Premier League that you can just say, all right, let's take these next 10 minutes off. Let's just, you know, we'll play lazy. We'll sit on our heels. No, you're in the goddamn Premier League. Any team is capable of beating any team. And I stick by that. So, you know, it was just a little bit of laziness. And for a team in Aston Villa's position, fighting so hard to get into that Champions League spot, you can't be doing that. You just can't do it. You got Tottenham Hotspurs who are not letting off the gas. And they're scoring with players that aren't named Son. So that's a dangerous team right now.
Yeah. You got to think too that Spurs also have a game in hand still. So that's pretty difficult to really see that your confidence and your maturity level is going to play a lot into this, the remainder of your run. And we already called that Villa had probably one of the most difficult running set of fixtures to come, and they still do. Sean, what do you take away from this matchup?
Yeah. Just really that right side of Aston Villa was exposed in that 11-minute stretch where Brentford came back. Everything was down that left-hand side. Two assists for Sergio Reguilon, and then one set up by Damsgaard. For whatever reason, Villa didn't really have an answer for that. But they do walk away with a point in the end, like Kyle talked about. Ollie Watkins with 18. Two-headed goals puts him at 5 on the season. That puts him the top in that category. He's a pretty much all-around striker in terms of finishing. Left foot, right foot, headed goals, penalties. He can do it all. And he's having an unbelievable season, so credit to him. But, yeah, I think they're going to be rooting hard for Arsenal, for Man City, for West Ham, and for Liverpool in the next round of European football, because I don't think they're going to get top four. I think it's going to be them getting that fifth spot and hoping that – the Premier League gets an extra spot in Champions League next year.
Yeah, I think they're going to be rooting for those three teams that you listed pretty heavily either as well, because they could get fourth place ideally for them if Spurs loses to Arsenal, to Manchester City, and to Liverpool, because Spurs does have to play all three teams still. So if Villa somehow gets some type of momentum coming back and don't drop as many points as the Spurs do in the future, it could potentially still be there. So a little bit of hope for villains out there. Another team with a little bit of hope out there, just because the destiny is in their hands now again. Deja vu. I feel like we've been here before, so I won't get too excited. But it is Arsenal.
Oh, you fucking jackass. Set that up, huh?
Oh, it was a perfect transition. But you see how calm and cool and collected. It's experience of knowing that you've been in first before this season and last season. Don't get too overhyped. But yes, Arsenal did put in quite a performance over Brighton this weekend. They won 3-0 over at the Amex Stadium. We had a relatively dominant display that saw Brighton's 12-game unbeaten streak at home come to an end. This was our fourth shutout in a row in all competitions, starting with the 1-0 win over Porto in the Champions League, the final leg there. It also included our midweek fixture, which put an end to Luton Town's 18 straight games with a goal streak, which was the second highest for any newly promoted team in history of newly promoted teams. And at the time of Luton's 18 goal streak was the longest active streak in the EPL this season. As mentioned, but probably not nearly as much because I was out of commission, but it is a second shutout against Manchester City was also included in that, which ended their 57th home game goal streak. So this defense is the real deal, and it's led by, I'm going to coin them as this season's best center back partnership. We kind of talked about it before. They're also one of the only center back partnerships that have been able to really play the majority of the season together. They have a 70% win rate when they're together, and that matches the 71% that Arsenal has win rate as well. So you'll hear it in competitions, you'll hear it in finals. Championships are won by good defense, and this is essentially what we have. We just have a really long championship game going on with the next seven games, so the defense has to be there. Arsenal led the league, or currently lead the league, in most clean sheets this season with 14 over Everton, Liverpool, and Man City, and Newcastle, who are all tied in second with just 9. And for reference, and listen, 9 is a good feat as well, but for reference, and don't laugh at this one, it's a true stat, Man U finished last season in first place with 17 clean sheets. So there's still a lot of room to improve, or rooms to include more clean sheets for Arsenal. Arsenal and Liverpool and Newcastle all tied second place last year with 14 clean sheets. This game was an entertaining game from the get-go. Arsenal dominated, I want to say, very early on. The first goal that came up, it was due, I would say. Brighton had two or three real good opportunities on the counter, but still was just stopped on with the defensive prowess that is the back line of Ben White, Gabriel, Saliba, and then started this game was actually Zinchenko. But Saka opened up the scoring from the penalty spot after a move into the box that Lamptey slide tackled on Jesus, which a little bit controversial at the moment, just didn't catch enough of the ball to really affect the direction of where it was going. So that was how we opened up. Saka put another penalty away, which makes his 30th goal/assist for the first time in his career in all competitions. Last year, he finished with 26, and the year before was 19. So really impressive from him for the season. Brighton did follow closely behind Saka's goal with probably the best chance of the game by Julio Inseso, who we've talked about in nauseam over the past two seasons of the podcast. Really, really good, talented player from South America. It was dealt very well by Raya, probably one of his best saves of the season, which doesn't say a whole lot since he's rarely under pressure and isn't forced to make saves like that. But really, really great stuff from him as well. The second goal came shortly after. With Jorginho set up Kai Havertz for a goal inside of the 6-yard box. The former Seagull, then Leandro Trossard, put a nail in the coffin at the end of the game against his former club with a second half chip over the keeper to make it 3-0 and really put a stamp on that. One thing I'll say is that, you know, Havertz with his goal and assist has now had his most productive English Premier League season so far. That's between Arsenal and Chelsea. This is not for all competitions. It's just for the Premier League. You have to go back to when Chelsea won the Champions League to have his most productive season, all comps, which he was able to get 6 better goals/assists in that. So he finished that season with 20 goals and assists, all comps. But a good game, dominating force from Arsenal. It's hard to see the guys really let up more than one goal per game at this rate. But what were you guys' takeaway, Sean? What was your takeaway on this game? And your thoughts?
Yeah, I think you summed it up pretty well. It's a pretty dominant performance overall. Brighton, just like we talked about last week, Kyle and I, they just really haven't had a lot of answers for the big boys throughout this year, and that was kind of on display in this game as well. Arsenal's been so difficult to break down, and that was kind of the case here again. I think they only had 2 shots on goal, Brighton, both by Inseso. One, I think both were actually outside of the box, so... yeah, obviously it was a quality strike, but at the same time, Arsenal really limited the big chances in this game. And to me, I just wanted to pop down to the title odds, which according to Opta after the Liverpool and this match, the favorites are Man City at 39.7%. Then there's Liverpool at 31.3% and Arsenal at 29%. to me, you know, with the form they're in and kind of Kyle kind of, I know he already agrees with me. We talked about it last week. I don't know how you could say Arsenal are not considered the favorites at this point in the season with their advantage in goal differential being top of the table and just seven games to go with the defense and form that they're in.
Yeah, it's tough. I think it's a frustrating projection, but we kind of reviewed this on week 33's cast, and I think you and I were the ones on it. We went over the run-in, and Arsenal's remaining fixtures, I think they're probably weighing this a little bit too heavily, and they're not considering the form, but they're looking at who they still have left to face, and they definitely have the more difficult ones out of the three of them. Although, Sean, you were pretty critical on Liverpool's remaining fixtures. I know you were weighing more swords, you know, if it was between a three and a four, it's more of a four for them. So just, you know, trying to keep it at a truth there. Of course, drawing Manchester City, that now looks like a very good draw. And then beating the goals away is difficult to predict. But I think Man City was the hardest game that we were going to, you know, face. They were a 5 of 5 difficulty. And the goals, I had them only as a level 2 of 5 just because of the current form they've been in. We still have Villa home, Wolves away, Manchester United away, which you saw what they were able to do with Liverpool away. Jurgen Klopp did come out with an interesting quote. They said if Manchester United plays the way they did against Liverpool, against Arsenal, he said Arsenal will win that game 100%. That was a nice little shout out from Klopp. I appreciate that. And then we also have Chelsea away, which I noted in that week 33 podcast are all 3 out of 5. But the one that really has me, you know, questioning maybe more drop points is the Spurs game away. It would be so sweet to get 3 points away at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium and then hopefully go on to win the title that way. But like I said before, plenty of games to drop points at. Each three of our teams are of the highest caliber. I mean, we are easily three of the most dominating teams in all of Europe. So it's really anyone's game. And like you said, as soon as you take control of that steering wheel, you just try not to let it go and let it slip. So hopefully we can continue. I would love to see that percentage go up sooner than later. But at this point, it's fucking crapshoot. No one will know.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think City is going to win the whole thing. Hell yeah. Yeah, why not?
Yeah, I mean, you don't have a lot of hard games left.
That's one thing I'm looking at. I think maybe they're giving you such the dog shit leg just because of your strength of schedule. I know you still got a lot of games against the top 4 or 5 teams. So it's, I mean, really what this comes down to is Liverpool's chilling, but that Arsenal City game is going to be a massive decider.
Yeah, to see if it actually has any weight being a tie that was 0-0.
No, exactly.
Yep. All right, well, with that being said, I think we pop into our rapid kicks real quick, which, as you all know, we express our acknowledgments for close games, great players, hot streaks, yada, 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 yada. And the first one we can kind of talk about, because we, you know, Kyle predicted that they're going to win the league, is Man City 4, Crystal Palace 2. City rolls into victory thanks to their big guns, Kevin De Bruyne. We were kind of questioning where he was last week when he played against Arsenal, but this week he had 2 goals and assist, and Haaland was back on the score sheet with 1. So you got the big guns firing again when you need to, especially with the Champions League fixture coming tomorrow for them as well against Real Madrid. As far as it goes for the next one, I'll talk about Tottenham 3, Forest 1. Spurs overtake Aston Villa for 4th place. We kind of talked about on goal differential thanks to second half goals from defenders Mickey van der Ven and Pedro Porro. This now has Spurs tied with Arsenal for most goals coming from defenders this season with either 13 or 14. I can't remember. I think it's 14. I want to say it's 14, but one or two won't kill me. And then the last one, we have a couple more. So Sean, why don't you go ahead and take that away?
Sure. So one of the big ones was West Ham 2, Wolves 1, second half comeback for the Hammers. James Ward-Prowse scored an Olympico, which basically means he scored directly from a corner kick. Pretty rare. I think Douglas Luiz did it last year. That's really one of the only times I can remember it in the Prem. But this win puts them just 1 point behind Manchester United for 7th place. One note on the goal, it does not count as a direct free kick goal. Ward-Prowse is just still one goal behind David Beckham for the all-time lead in terms of direct free kicks. And then the other game that I wanted to mention was Luton Town exacting their revenge on the Cherries with a second half comeback of their own. This game was obviously one that was played the reverse fixture just a few weeks ago and was a wild one with the 4-3 comeback for Bournemouth to beat Luton. Well, Luton flipped the script this time. They scored a 90th winner of their own through captain Carlton Morris. Only Liverpool with 27 have more goals in the last 15 minutes of play than the Hatters this season. It just shows they have that never say die attitude. and they fight till the end. And certainly they'll continue to do that this season. They are just outside of the or inside the relegation zone, but tied on points with Forest, but going down right now based on goal differential.
I think ideally, in a perfect world for Sean, you would see Luton Town surpass Forest, Forest go down, get relegated, and we keep the Hatters up. I think ideally for Sean specifically, but I think everyone wants to see that. But talking about another team that was close to relegation or is now even closer to relegation was the Everton game. Kyle, do you want to go over that rapid kick?
Absolutely. So it was a 4-2 win. Kevin De Bruyne, 2 goals and assist. Erling Haaland, fantastic goal. I mean, just world class.
Not Everton players. None of them are playing for Everton.
Yep, yep. So the danger for this game was Haaland's goal. I don't know if you guys watched it. I thought he got hurt. That was a hard challenge that he scored on. But, I mean, we got to go back to Kevin De Bruyne's masterclass. He scores 10 minutes after letting up a goal with a worldie. But, you know, going to the other team, Everton, they needed to win. They're getting a 2-point deduction this week. So, I mean, that win kind of makes it like they tied the game. So they're still getting points throughout the week, which is massive. They are on that cusp of they're not safe. They should be safe, but they're not safe yet. And that's from multiple point deductions. But, you know, goals like that against a 10-man Burnley scoring in the first half stoppage time with Dominic Calvert-Lewin, you got to do it. So I'm a little surprised it was only 1-0. They did play at least 30 minutes against a 10-man Burnley, which is, I mean, I don't know if there's a worse thing in the league than a 10-man Burnley. So that's something. To only get 12 shots for that whole game is not the best. But they got 3 points, so they needed it. So that's
what was it? Was that Burnley's third or only second time being with 10 men? Because they've had it a few times.
Dude, all I know is that they can't afford it. they
can't do it. Fair enough. Well, I think that wraps up the rapid kicks. We're going to take a quick little break and then we're going to pop right into the segment 3 look ahead, which will go over the week's games and that. But Sean's got something before we even hit that music.
Yeah, Burnley has 7 red cards this year. That's 3 more or 2 more than anybody else. Liverpool's got 5. But yeah, Burnley's got 7. That's like the second one in their last 5 too. Yeah Burnley's and they're coached by that scumbag bald head Vincent Kompany. So it's very much up Kyle's alley.
I thought you were gonna say Pep. All right, that works. We're good.
All right. Well, we'll take a quick break with these red card action. We'll come right back at you with the weekend and the week ahead. The schedule congestion is back. And it is back because the Champions League and the Europa League and the Europa Conference League are back. But highlighting it for the weekend or the week look ahead is the Champions League first. And first and foremost, we have Arsenal versus Bayern Munich at the Emirates Stadium on Tuesday, which is tomorrow. This is a 3 o'clock game, and it is going to be one of Arsenal's biggest revenge games out there. Again, the last time we played against them, it was 10-2 aggregate. Absolutely destroyed us. It was embarrassing. But this Arsenal team, if anyone can do it, it's this Arsenal team against this current Bayern Munich squad, who have recently, over the past couple of weeks, been ravaged with a bit of injuries. And with the addition of Harry Kane, it's just destiny that he also continues to not get any trophies. So who else to do it and knock him out of the Champions League than Arsenal? So that is tomorrow. It's at 3 o'clock. I'll be turning off all of my cellular devices at 3 o'clock at work so that I can go home and watch it. Wink, wink, live on a replay, but that is a huge game. But we are down to the final 8 competitors, so we're in the quarterfinals. So what are the other quarterfinals we have this week in the Champions League, Kyle?
A bunch of them. I do want to say, though, I think James brought up a great point with Harry Kane. I don't think that Bayern is going to win this just because the trophy that Harry Kane is going to get this season is going to be an Arsenal icon for the Golden Boot in Germany. So it's poetic that he loses to the Gunners and then gets the trophy for the Gunners. So I personally think it's going to happen. But we do have a bunch of other games. City is going to play Real Madrid. That game has me hella nervous. Real Madrid in the Champions League is never an easy game. It doesn't matter if they're playing the reserve team. It's just they dominate that tournament. I mean, best case scenario for me right now is just no injuries. That's what I'm worried about.
Yeah.
So we have to start the best 11 players if we want to you know, go toe to toe with Madrid. So try to stay healthy, watch out for dirty challenges. And I mean, this one's at the Bernabeu, so I'm happy with a draw. You get out of there with 1 point and no injuries. That's a massive victory for City. But
yeah, I would agree.
Along with that, we do have Barcelona PSG. That's going to be a fun one. Barcelona is playing very well right now, and PSG is historically not good in the Champions League. I do think that Mbappe is going to be playing way, way, way harder than he needs to play just because he's trophyless in the Champions League. This is his one thing he can leave this season with and be, hey, you know what? What's this? The sixth Ligue 1 title? Awesome. How about one Champions League? That means so much more to him. So you know he's coming out swinging that game. And then we got Atletico versus Dortmund. That, I'm going to go ahead and say, is going to be a one-goal game, maybe. I don't think Dortmund score on Atletico. I think their defense and Diego Simeone is the best defensive coach in the world. They just never let up goals. That's just how they operate. And if you're not playing with the best players in the world, I can see 1-0, maybe 2-0 Atletico. But we're getting to the crunch time. These are the best 8 teams left in Europe. So they're going to be good games. Any team can beat any team.
Yep. Yep. Well put.
Yeah, but you know, moving out of Europe back into England, there are still some great games ahead of us. One of the best is going to be Newcastle Spurs. Tottenham are going to look to widen their control of fourth place with a game Villa will likely drop points in. Meanwhile, Newcastle can move as high as sixth place with a win in this fixture. So, you know, Spurs still have that game in hand. They're looking good. Their destiny is in their own hands finally, which, I mean, they haven't been losing games, man. Son has been in phenomenal form. He took a little break this weekend. You know, he made way for Van der Ven and Pedro Porro to have phenomenal goals this weekend, world-class goals. But, you know, Tottenham, they trounced Newcastle the first time they played. It was 4-1. So I think Tottenham takes this right now in their current form, and I think it's going to be a massive outcome for both teams.
Yeah, I think you're right. Their current form, I think they've lost one of their last six games. That's Spurs, that is. Newcastle's been a little bit more erratic. But this, to me, is a gigantic game for them, Spurs, that is, as it's potentially their first difficult game before they start their massive run of difficult fixtures. They will have 2 weeks break before their next one, which is home against Arsenal. But then it's very difficult because you're away at Liverpool, you're away you're home for City, but then you have a couple of really difficult fixtures in there, away at Chelsea, and then away at Liverpool. Like I said before, like this, you got to get a win here so that you can walk into that very hard streak or that hard run of fixtures with the W under your belt for momentum purposes. This is also a great way, you kind of mentioned before, to put additional pressure on Villa. They play first. This is Spurs. They play first so they could win and put more pressure on Villa against a very difficult fixture that's coming up right now, and that's Arsenal versus Aston Villa at the Emirates Stadium. So if Spurs do their job and win, put additional pressure on Villa, Villa has to play a little bit more forward thinking, try to go out for an all-blown win, which will kind of help Arsenal's, you know, methodology a little bit more. They have the defensive prowess where they're just waiting at this point for teams to open up just a little bit so that they can possess the ball and counter and put something in the back of the net a little bit more without worrying about scoring too many goals. So this is another revenge game for Arsenal. Villa won a very cagey affair between us in the first half of the season, 1-0 back in December from the John McGinn, like first 10-minute goal, I want to say. Villa currently are playing in a seventh place space since they have been since the new year. So this is a good time to play Villa if you're Arsenal, and especially a good time to play him at home. So hopefully we can keep that momentum going. Hopefully we keep momentum from a Champions League win going into the weekend and thereon and thereon and thereon. But that's it for the look ahead. We do have a new segment very at the bottom here quickly because the lock of the week, although Kyle, congratulations, you have really pulled away here, my friend.
Yep, that's 4-5 on the season. We are almost at 500, which is the golden promised land. Very exciting to come. But in slew of that this week, we're going to do the top 5 goals of the week because this week had some breathtaking strikes. First goal, number one, hands down, Bruno Fernandes. That was an absolute, I mean, it was a piss missile from 40 yards out that, James, you mentioned it earlier. It just snuck inside the post. So, I mean, you look at shot placement, too. It's just fantastic. Just an all-around baller goal. And coming in at second is coming from the same game, same team. Mainoo, if you guys didn't see the goal, it's an 18-year-old really sticking it to Klopp on his farewell tour. It's really just a goal from nothing. His back is toward the net. He just swings the right leg around, curls it. The ball probably curves a full yard. Like, it was almost 3 feet of curve on that ball. It was insane. Got right in the inner post. Nothing left to say about that goal. Coming in third is going to be Kevin De Bruyne. Absolute rocket. Rocket in the 12th minute of the game. They let up a goal real early in the game, so they had to answer, because this is the title race. You got to answer and leave it to the best. Leave it to Kevin De Bruyne. It's a, you can call it a power shot, you can call it a placement, you can call it a curve shot. It was just perfection. That's all I'm going to say about it. Coming in at fourth, we're going to have a tie. Both Tottenham players, Van der Ven and Pedro Porro, both phenomenal strikes. I want to say Van der Ven's was a little nicer. James, you mentioned it earlier. It's his left foot. He's a center back, or he's a defender, and it was a rocket ship. But Pedro Porro had a snap goal off of a half volley that I didn't even think he'd get his leg to it in time, and he found it, and he also hit it with a clean-ass strike. Coming in at fifth is going to be Mbeumo. Guys, watch the goal. He had 2 seconds to see the ball. The ball came in over his head from the corner, and he just turned, stuck up a foot, and smacked it into the far side of the goal. Goalie didn't even know that that ball was coming. It was a phenomenal, phenomenal shot. I do want to shout out, as Sean mentioned earlier, James Ward-Prowse. I left it off the list because it's not a goal from play. It's, you know, it's a set piece. It's a corner kick. But those don't happen often. You're looking at those from players like Messi, Di Maria, players that can place that ball inch perfect from 30 yards out. So that's what you got to do. You got to be of that caliber to score those goals. So I will definitely shout out James Ward-Prowse this week as well.
Yeah, that's a very impressive way to put it on when you're shooting on the baseline, curl it out of the post, then into the post. Very impressive stuff, obviously. Not necessarily, I don't think, intentional, but great nonetheless. And then just to keep everyone on the edge of their seats to see how poorly Sean and I do in our lock of the weeks, Sean did put a little here that if he had to, his lock of the week would be West Ham over Fulham. West Ham are currently plus 130, and Fulham are dreadful away from home, as we have learned over the past couple of fixtures. So without further ado, we will see who comes in dead last at the lock of the week. Is it going to be Sean or me? Because Kyle has revitalized his streak, and like you said before, is 4-5.
I'm not out of the woods yet, though. I mean, I lose out, y'all win out. I'm dead last.
That's true. Well, with 7 fixtures left, it's possible we could get a tie in there.
I guess I'm going to have to bet on Arsenal every single week, because I'm okay losing if that's the case.
Very good. Very good. All right. Well, that takes us to the end of the cast. And as always, we appreciate the listen, the feedback, and the community outreach. So if you have anything for us or hear anything that you want to talk about or think we missed something, don't hesitate. Shoot us a message on Instagram or Twitter, and we'll get back to you next week. Until then, enjoy the rest of your week.